Hi, I'm the Lion in Love from Sleuth, and you're listening to CITR.
Hey, everybody, you're listening to the Spencer Latu Show on CITR 101.9 FM. We are a progressive politics show broadcasting live from unceded Musqueam territory on UBC's Point Grey campus. I'm with my co-host, Ajit.
What's up?
And joining us is special guest, friend of the show, Sammy Smart.
Hello.
And I'm your host, Spencer Latu. And for today's show, we are speaking truth to power about current events. But before we get to all that, I would like to acknowledge that the land on which we gather is the unceded territory of the Coast Salish peoples, including the territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations. So in Indigenous news, there is Indigenous resistance happening in Hawaii, of all places. So the headline from the New York Times, July 17th, by Mihir Zaveri: Hawaiian elders protesting telescope construction are arrested. When completed, the 30-meter telescope on Mauna Kea's summit is expected to be the largest telescope in the Northern Hemisphere, but its construction has drawn heated opposition. So I don't know if you've seen this in the news, Ajit. Have you heard about this?
I have not.
Sammy, have you heard about this?
Yes, I have.
Okay, nice. Yeah, I'm all up on Indigenous Twitter, so I'm seeing all this stuff happening. So, and just from what I knew before getting into all this, I knew that Mauna Kea was a super spiritual, like, it's where their entire creation story is founded on. So this is an important site. It's a beautiful mountain. There's already observatories on there, which is really sad. But, and so there was Indigenous resistance to that already. And now it's, in the article it says here, on Wednesday, the opposition had a new face. About 30 Hawaiian elders were arrested as they blocked a road leading to Mauna Kea's summit to halt the construction of the 30-meter telescope. They described an emotional but peaceful scene as the elders, who were sitting under tents on the road, were escorted by police officers to nearby white vans while dozens of protesters chanted and cried. Some had to be carried. We have come to the point where enough is enough, said Leilana Kapuni, one of the elders, she said in a phone interview. She said she was arrested for obstruction of a government road, but later returned to the blockade. The mountain is sacred, she said. So that's it. So far, it looks like they, according to Fox News, the researchers and the people building the telescope have given up on trying to break through the blockade of Indigenous people. So that's really good. You know, that's good. You know, keep their sacred sites to themselves. I mean, Ajit, do you have any thoughts on that? What do you think? Do you think it's justified to stare at the stars to desecrate these people's religious?
Yeah, I mean, going with the flow of the show, I think, like, we shouldn't be focusing so much so on space, but more so on our own Earth and the things going on. And, like, I'm sure Hawaii is in the way of any sort of climate catastrophe. It's an island in the middle of the Pacific, so it won't go too well. Yeah, and there's already observatories there. And, like, of course, I get it. The science crowd likes to say, like, you know what? It's for the sake of science. We can do great research by doing this. But
I think they said that about, like, phrenology for a while, too. So I don't know.
True.
It's for the betterment of mankind. This is progress. It's crushing Indigenous people. Right. Hell, even all of science, really. You know, all the ologies kind of built.
Well, science, you're right, has become a big business itself,
it's
right?
It's built on, like, you know, colonization. You know, where else do they get all these things, right? So, Sammy, any thoughts?
Yeah, I think like part of why this is like really interesting for me is that I already knew about the Mauna Kea Observatory that's there that like tracks carbon levels. And I learned about that studying geography, but we were never told it was a sacred mountain.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know why in this field of geography they wouldn't even tell us that. So when I learned from like being on Twitter that this is sacred and that this is really bad, I was like, oh my God, I have to like question everything that I thought I knew already.
Yeah.
Because I thought it was like a good thing at first. And then I realized like, oh no, I'm stupid. I don't have any context for this.
I was on a Mexican vacation, and when you go to Chichen Itza, they give you this like kind of like Mayan rundown, and they said that they built like telescopes out of stones and stuff like that, where they could like kind of like they figured out that the heliocentric model of the universe just from like, you know, a stone observatory. So I was kind of thinking like, I don't know about this whole like, you know, man must dominate nature kind of narrative for science to happen, because I feel like indigenous cultures have always found a way to like have scientific advancement. So this, I don't know, I'm not really of the pro-science camp, you know, and I also realize like how problematic the whole science community is for indigenous peoples, considering how, you know, science and like, you know, even medicine has been used to exterminate them, right? Mm-hmm. You know, that's why they're getting sterilized, is they bring them in to, you know, conduct these kinds of experiments. And of course, like, you know, in Holocaust history, how much, you know, science was a big part, a big part of that project. So a lot going on there. A great source I saw on Scone Dog Millionaire, great Instagram account. they posted in their story, Canadian universities are complicit. The Association of Canadian Universities for Research in Astronomy, ACURA, is one of the partners in the 30-meter Telescope Observatory Corporation, which is trying to build the 30-meter telescope on Mauna Kea, a sacred site on Kanoka Maoli, without their consent. And so one of the universities in it is the University of British Columbia, amongst Athabasca, Bishops Brandon McGill, McMaster, Queen, St. Mary's, Trent, Alberta, Calgary, Laval, Lethbridge, Manitoba, Montreal, Toronto, Victoria, Waterloo, Western Ontario, and York. So, but I looked, and the UBC seat on their like governance structure is empty, so I don't know how complicit UBC is, but they have their name on it, because obviously UBC wants their name on everything, so... It's yeah. So before, you know, I love to lambast them, but I'll leave this one up in the air.
Right.
I'm not an astronomer. I made it halfway through Cosmos, and that's all I got for. Astrology. I'm getting better at
that. Right. Were you on something when you were watching Cosmos?
No. Drugs are bad. Okay. Drugs are really bad. We have a war on drugs.
Right.
Yeah. That's
completely justified.
Yeah. No. And wasn't created by a bunch of racists. Anyway. So, but UBC. Speaking of UBC, they did have another really great non-problematic partnership. This is the headline from Vancouver Courier. UBC Amazon partner on tech giant's first cloud technology center for Canada. This is written by Tyler Orton, posted July 15th. And I saw this on the UBC Students Against Bigotry Facebook feed. Shouts out Students Against Bigotry. That's they always have the spiciest UBC takes. That's where I got the news about UBC getting canceled. That was amazing. Yeah, actually, you know, let's talk about UBC getting canceled for a second. Do you see that, Ajit?
I didn't.
UBC is not welcome in the Pride Parade.
Oh, that's right. I did see
but
that.
But I'm
right,
welcome right, in right. it, so ha, huh, yeah. UBC, eat that.
Right. Well, yeah. That's good.
People I don't have my own float
out.
Yet. Sammy, any thoughts? UBC getting canceled?
Completely justified.
Yeah. Cancel culture, one. Fake progressive corporation university,
zero.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and now they're going to get double canceled for partnering with Amazon. So Amazon.com Incorporated is expanding its expertise. This is from like a business column, so this is always very, very propagandistic written article. It's so bizarre. Is expanding its expertise on campus at the University of British Columbia. The tech giant announced July 10th that its Amazon Web Services Incorporated, AWS, subsidiary would launch its Cloud Innovation Center, CIC model, at the university in early 2020. The model, which provides students advanced AWS tools and cloud technologies, has been applied in seven other locations ranging from Europe to South Korea. The UBC Center will be focused on community health and well-being. I wonder how that's going to work. UBC Associate Provost Simon Bates said specific projects are still being developed, but the plan is to hit the ground running with projects when the center opens in January. We're looking at it, if you like, as a part of a digital transformation agenda at UBC, he told Business in Vancouver. We're looking to help our students develop not just the deep academic and disciplinary skills they get from studying with us, but also the sorts of skills they'll need to go to varied roles in the workplace. The new CIC pronounced kick. What the new kick will be managed? Will be manned by 3 Amazon workers and 3 UBC staff members. Okay, how much are the Amazon staff members getting paid? Do you think they have to pee in bottles while they're working in the warehouse,
or
do they have they have those Amazon bracelets where they can track all their moves, and if they go to the wrong bathroom, they get penalized for it.
They get like an electric shock.
Yeah, I think they get an unhappy face. They get like sad reacted by like Jeff Bezos on their like their non dystopic social media Amazon. It's actually really crazy, and I'll just take this. Little aside here to say, how problematic is this relationship? Do you think UBC can get canceled again, Ajit?
I think they can, but I will also admit the sort of aura around technology and Vancouver's obsession with being like, Silicon Valley North, because we love being Hollywood North. It's going to take a little bit more effort on our end. But it's like, because like the headline will be like, oh, major investment from Amazon coming to UBC, and it's progressing.
It's bringing three jobs.
It's being 3 jobs. But don't worry, they're caring about student well-being too, which, yeah, of course, I'm being sarcastic there. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't think it's really aimed at, like, it's part of that monitoring.
Richest
culture,
man on earth brings 3 jobs to Vancouver, heralded as hero by his lackeys on r/neoliberal. Sammy, any thoughts?
We live in hell.
Yeah, this is like, pretty hellish. There's a cactus club coming. Uh-huh. To UBC.
That's wild.
Yeah, right.
But we can afford to go to Cactus Club here.
Yeah, I don't know what the deal is. It'll be
inflated prices here too, right?
Yeah, it'll probably be even more expensive.
Oh my god, I can't wait.
Yeah, that'll be gross.
$10 highballs.
Bellinis.
Yeah, at least all my fellow art students will all have jobs there. That's awesome. Hey-oh, I can say that because I did that. And yeah, so now we have Amazon coming. They're going to build a Raytheon plant. I'm kidding. Lockheed Martin's coming. Coca-Cola's already here. Thank you, Sammy, for exposing that. That was awesome. Yeah, it's here's what we get. We get easy access to the full suite of AWS cloud tools.
Ooh.
So I don't know what that means. The Kick, meanwhile, will also have access to Amazon's network of expertise, as well as experts based at other Kicks around the world. We're seeing cloud adoption across every segment in Canada, from nonprofits to education and all levels of governments. AWS Vice President Teresa Carlson said in a statement, the Kick at UBC further accelerates the digital transformation of the Canadian public sector by providing teams access to next generation cloud technology from AWS that can be used to solve real world challenges. Our expertise and experience with machine learning, high performance computing, and data analytics will directly help the UBC community in delivering innovative projects. Okay, that was so much like tech buzz speak. I don't even know what one of those words means about anything.
All of it means union busting.
Yeah, I think that's what it means, is that depressed wages, worker power is smashed, everyone gets a bracelet to be tracked.
Chattel slavery, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is worse, actually, because I don't think they had nearly as much control. Because there were used to be slave revolts.
Right.
Don't think you can revolt if everyone's like, tracked by Amazon Cloud Services.
Eyes were your trackers. Now it's all technology.
You could trick the overseer, Right. Now the overseer is an algorithm. So this is some real Matrix Skynet shit.
Tough life.
The official name of the new center is UBC Community Health and Wellbeing Kick.
Of course.
Powered by AWS. That is really
mouthful of bullshit.
Yeah, community health and well-being. It's like, oh, students want community health and well-being. Well, we got it. What's inside? Oh, we have a network of expertise. Any expertise on health? No, just cloud computing software.
Well, we're pretty much being guinea pigs, right?
Yeah, but let's think about what good these experts have. It was mentioned earlier, they are solving real world challenges. So, what's the real world challenge Amazon's working on right now? This is from Al Jazeera. What is Amazon's role in U.S. immigration crackdown? Activists blast tech giant's business offering cloud services to ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, the U.S. government agency conducting raids on innocent brown people. So how does Amazon support U.S. immigration enforcement? Activist group Mi Gente, which is calling for Amazon to stop powering ICE, says the cloud computing behemoth has contracts with the Department of Homeland Security. U.S. authorities manage their immigration caseload with Palantir software. So that's another scary Silicon Valley billionaire. What's that guy's name again? Peter Thiel.
He's just the worst.
Yeah. Sorry?
He's one of the
worst. He is the worst.
Like, overtly
worst. Yeah. Well, he brags about being the worst. So, I mean, there you go. You got what you wanted, Peter.
Must have been bullied.
He's the one that got rid of, what was that horrible website that he killed? Gawker.
Gawker.
Yes. That was good. Because I think they outed him or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they got back at them. U.S. authorities manage their immigration caseload with Palantir software that facilitates tracking down would-be deportees. They're not people or children or migrants anymore. They're deportees.
That's the new
Orwellian speak for these people. Amazon Web Services hosts these databases while Palantir provides the computer programs to organize the data. So Amazon effectively enables Immigration and Customs Enforcement to detain and deport. This is a petition from a petition on Mahente's website. Amazon and Palantir have secured a role as the backbone for the federal government's immigration and law enforcement dragnet, allowing them to pursue multi-billion-dollar government contracts in various agencies at every single level of law enforcement. So knowing that Amazon is effectively enables ICE, looking back at, you know, this techno speak here, what do you think? Do you think we'll get some easy access to the full suite of cloud tools to help deport innocent people displaced by neoliberalism? What do you think that means for UBC students? Will we learn how to become ICE officials?
Yeah, that's probably their goal, right?
UBC, the new ICE training facility. Yeah, UBC Heart ICE. That's we should make T-shirts.
Well, I'm just kind of curious, like.
Well, I guess the people that made the UBC clothes inside the UBC bookstore finally get to, you know, it comes full circle as they're getting deported from Canada, you know, and UBC gets to partner with the cloud technology that you know keeps track of them.
Well,
it's easier than the computers they used in the concentration camps.
Well, you can use the cloud technology to help your anxiety because you're getting deported.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you, Ajit. Sammy, how do you think cloud adoption across every segment in Canada, from nonprofits to education and all levels of government, will help the deported people of the migrant camps, well, concentration camps in the United States?
I can't even think of like a joke or a riff here. Like, this is just
it's really scary. Mm.
It's so scary. Right. I think that ICE and right here, like, legally required to change their name to ICE powered by Amazon.
Yeah, that'd be good, actually. And they'll put like the little like the prime like check thing at the bottom. That'd be good too.
Absolutely. Yeah. And like the little arrow.
Yeah.
Like I to E. I don't know.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Why not?
And like have like a mother and child like at either end, so they're like separated.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah,
some really good symbolry. Yeah, I just think, you know, it's crazy how like, and this is kind of like my own little like fun thing to call out culture. Is UBC is like this? They market themselves as this like, I don't even know what to describe it as, but like woke, is that the word?
Yeah, woke.
Progressive
somehow.
Liberal, even.
Yeah.
Caretaker.
Do those words work together?
Yeah, I don't know. They're all kind of mean the same thing at this point. Yeah, they definitely present themselves as like
health conscious.
Yeah. People, like caring about people. Right. Mm-hmm. Specifically rich people, but you know, technically they're people. Yeah, and now UBC is fully, you know, and they're just like, you know, totally cool with this. And this was, you know, this was July 15th, Prime Day was 16th, 17th. So this is basically like, you know, pre-crossing the picket line for the Amazon workers that were on strike on Prime Day because they're treated like slaves by the richest man on earth.
Right.
So, I mean, come on, UBC. But then again, UBC is like horrifically anti-union. So, yeah. Our soon union president is anti-union.
Oh my god!
Surprise!
That's something. Yeah. So basically, the corporate capture of our world is basically, you know, it's kind of like come full circle. Public institutions meant to serve for the people by the people are partnering with, you know, like fascist forces or fascist enabling forces, fascist sympathizers.
Right.
So that's where we're at UBC. You know, bring it back to the land acknowledgement. What is the stolen land at UBC being used for? You know, partnering with fascists. So that's great.
Right.
I'm sure the Musqueam people are very, you know, happy that, or I should say from that, according to the UBC, that, did you see that little magazine they put together at the end of the year?
Which one?
It was, I forget what it was called. It was like really, really beautiful, like artwork and stuff like that inside of it, but it had a little problem at the beginning where it referred to UBC as unoccupied land, right. Unused yeah. farmland before. But yeah, that's me. I don't know. I mean, I think it's almost easier to think like that, knowing that like these people were displaced and they're kicked off their land just for it to be used to support ICE and Amazon.
Right. Well, yeah. They don't mind.
Yeah, no. The benevolent overlords right. of the colonizers have really come, it's really okay. helped out.
We keep up the tokenistic gestures.
Yeah, that reconciliation totem pole is looking stupider by the day. It's looking way, way, way horrible.
Big leap forward.
That's terrible, Ajit. Okay, we're going to have to take a short break for commercials. We'll be right back after that.
Or at Zulu, Neptune, and Red Cat Records.
Without the help and support of our friends, we here at CITR wouldn't be able to bring you all the great music, art, cinema, and culture that you love. Thanks to the long-standing support from the Rio Theater, we are able to keep you informed on all the great artists, films, and everything else coming to town there. For all the current information about who and what's playing at the Rio Theater, visit their website at www.riotheater.ca.
Discorder, that free magazine from CITR, has been documenting the best in music, arts, and culture since 1983. Snoop Dogg! Let's see what one man of prestige has to say about Discorder.
What up, though? This is Big Snoop Dogg, and I fucks with Discorder magazine. How about that?
Smoke you every day.
Pick up a copy around Vancouver or fuck with Discorder.
Hey, it's Max from Laverne, and you're listening to CITR. Yeah.
Hey, this is Janelle from Anybody's, and you're listening to CITR.
To understand more about fashion, we asked CITR student executive and fashion expert Jonathan Q what fashion means to him.
Like, it's just aesthetically something that's so ostentatious. Typically. I mean, because of course, I mean, it's also, you know, I mean, when you say fashion, I think people are talking explicitly about consumerism as opposed to someone who buys, like, you know, let's say, you know, someone buys a
If you really want to know more about fashion, come on down to CITR in the Student Union Building of UBC and pick up some of our merchandise à la mode. Nous avons t-shirts, sweatshirts, socks, and coffee mugs.
But it's also very aesthetically gripping.
To keep you styling in support of the station you love. Isn't that right, Jonathan?
Well, actually, is it? Because, I mean, you know, I was going to say because of the cultural vacuum that we exist within, but then, you know, really, fashion today is kind of derived from the European idea of couture. And that's been around for centuries.
What's up, everybody? We're back. You're listening to the Spencer Lachey Show on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from Musqueam, Musqueam territory. So we have a little bit of time for segments. So today's first segment is the Spencer Lachey Show Reading Club. So this week's book, this is from Oprah's list as well, Propaganda by Edward Bernays, written 1928. And it's kind of like a polemic on propaganda by this guy. He's the nephew of Sigmund Freud. And so he's a big supporter of tricking the masses, because he said, this is on the cover, only through the active energy of the intelligent few can the public at large become aware of and act upon new ideas. So that's kind of how he feels about the rest of us. And, you know, so he sees it more as a benevolent overlord kind of thing.
So he's promoting propaganda.
Yes, he's trying to. Right. He thinks propaganda shouldn't have been a dirty word because it turned out once everybody after 1918 found out that all the lies about the Hun that got everyone into World War One were lies, people got understandably pretty upset,
right.
And they viewed propaganda as bad. So that's why, you know, propaganda can only be done by Nazis and communists, and propaganda is not done by the Americans.
Nope.
That's called advertising and PR. So
marketing.
Anyways. Fun. So I just thought I had a couple of passages that I thought were just very fun and funny. So, you know, so and just you can forget that this was written in 1928 for a second, because it's just kind of it really says a lot about today. So I'll just try to get your first impressions. 20 or 25 years ago, businesses sought to run its own affairs regardless of the public. The reaction was the muckraking period, in which a multitude of sins were justly and unjustly laid to the charge of the interests. In the face of an unaroused public conscience, the large corporations were obliged to renounce their contention that their affairs were nobody's business. If today big business were to seek to throttle the public, a new reaction similar to that of 20 years ago would take place, and the public would rise and try to throttle big business with restrictive laws. Business is conscious of the public's conscience. This consciousness has led to a healthy cooperation. So, yeah. You know, this was obviously written in a time of rail barons and all the utilities being privatized. So it was a really he's writing just after the Gilded Age, right before the Great Depression. Mm-hmm. And I think about that as a very interesting way of seeing business and society. And I would say that 99% of people I know do not see business as, they see it as like kind of like, you know, whatever,
right?
Not actively trying to control people's perception of them.
Well, yeah, well, maybe in that time period, I guess, because like,
oh yeah, it definitely wouldn't happen today,
right because the information was disseminated differently. But yeah, I mean, I can totally see why he's like spouting that type of BS. I mean, it's like 1928, right?
Yeah.
So the Red
Scare. Roaring 20s.
Red Scare's in full swing.
Too. Yeah.
Yeah.
And business is good. You know, J.P. Morgan. Andrew Carnegie and John D. Rockefeller started their foundations to, you know, help the public out after they've, you know, made all their money gouging the public. So
right.
This is the kind of balance that creates a society where people, you know, look at, you know, a $1 trillion business like Apple and view, you know, brown people as the problem, but not like,
well, I mean, business is clearly benevolent. Like, just wait 5 years. What happened then?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. What happened after that? Right. A lot of Nazi collaboration right after that. And an entire tanking of an economy. Sammy, what are your thoughts about the consciousness of business and the public?
Like how people perceive business.
Yeah, and how business perceives people.
I feel like nobody ever really perceives, or okay, the layman doesn't really perceive business as being like a bad thing. It's like, businesses are good. They're here to provide us a service or a product, and we never really think twice about it until we're like, oh, I'm actually getting actively screwed over by these businesses. Mm-hmm. And it's like really crappy that it takes so long for us to realize that they're just feeding us with propaganda in a negative sense.
Yeah, and not in the good sense that Bernays is talking about. The good propaganda for our own good, to control our minds. Because anarchy would happen if everybody had a say.
Right.
For the last passage of the Spencer Latu Show Book Club, here is his remarks on businesses presenting themselves to the to the masses. So he says, an oil corporation which truly understands its many-sided relation to the public will offer that public not only good oil, but a sound labor policy. A bank will seek to show not only that its management is sound and conservative, but also that its officers are honorable both in their public and in their private life. He goes on with a few more examples, but he ends with, at whatever point a business enterprise impinges on the public consciousness, it must seek to give its public relations the particular character which will conform to the objectives which it is pursuing. So I pulled, you know, I just quickly Googled oil news and then banker news. So I was just to test it. So here's a Financial Post headline. Post haste, more oil jobs lost in Alberta. Trans Mountain's next move and a big day for the Fed. Stuff you need to know today. So that's the Financial Post propagandizing its constituency. And then there's a headline from the BBC. How tough is an investment banker's life? You know, so it's just, you know, from almost 100 years later, you know, these the strategy's all the same, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's kind of hard to dissect jobs in oil or bankers as, you know, hardworking people for society, especially that Epstein fella. Oh, wait, he's a disgusting pedophile.
Right.
So, yeah, Ajit, any thoughts on how propaganda shapes our perception of corporations that are trying to shape our perceptions?
Right. I mean, firstly, it's appropriate that he named the book Propaganda because it's literally propaganda, right?
Yeah. It's good. It's explaining it because he's sick of people trashing the good name of propaganda. This is good for business. This is how we're going to get people to buy stuff.
Right.
This is how we're going to sell 16 different types of soap in this free country.
Yeah. Well, Adam, the way I perceive propaganda, not necessarily positive or negative, it just is, right? Mm-hmm. It's always going to exist, right? And it's going to be used in whatever sort of way it needs to be by, like, obviously the person pushing it. But yeah, it is definitely a product of its time, right? I'm sure massive amounts of wealth were created for, you know, the top few percent, really reflective of today's day and age, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess people... Yeah, you made a really good point about what the layman, like how he's really apathetic towards business. He won't really pass judgment on it. And it's really indicative of the programming that's been done to us because we kind of don't really believe in our own agency anymore in that, like, businesses have to pay us or we need the business to have money, right?
Yeah, we need business for prosperity.
Right.
Jobs.
Right. And I guess that's the most, like... It's just propaganda. I feel it's part and parcel because we're already in the system doing the necessary, like, you know, being the, you know, the ticking pieces in the whole clock, right?
Yeah,
you just need
man.
Propaganda to keep you distracted, right?
Well, it's whole, like the oil, right? To use your metaphor, it's like the oil that keeps the machine going. Because
right.
then when the gears, you know, they start to hear the noises right, of right, the horrific right. machine or, you know, the blood that, well, I guess the blood of the oppressed is really what feeds it. But mm-hmm. I digress. So, speaking of propaganda, I would like to think that probably the most shocking, outlandish, but effective propaganda campaign of at least our, you know, recent memory, and, you know, I'd love to hear if you guys agree or disagree. You know, we were before WMD, so we missed out on that. That was very effective. Great conspiracy theory. But the latest one that's being pushed by the national security state, Russiagate. You know, very powerful... very powerful propaganda campaign. I mean, liberals are fully convinced that, you know, Vladimir Putin is about to, you know, made Donald Trump president, that Trump is a Putin puppet. And now, you know, in Canadian media, it's seeping in because, oh, there's an election coming up. Russians are coming.
Right.
Russians are coming. So I have this clip from, what is it? Front Burner CBC. It's a half decent podcast. Not great. Not horrible. I mean, very liberal, obviously. They had Chrystia Freeland on to talk about why invading Venezuela was
big.
And not invading was good, but Maduro's a dictator, so whatever happens, happens. But this is from FaceApp, so we'll discuss FaceApp and the controversy surrounding that, but here's from the podcast Front Burner.
So the first one that you saw a lot was that the company that developed and controls this app is based in Russia, in St. Petersburg. And of course, you know, these days we hear Russia and it's an absolute, you know, red flag. Tell me what you found out about that.
Right. So a lot of people were noting that the actual company that makes the app is based in Russia. Its developer is someone from Russia. And obviously people start freaking out a little bit. You know, we're heading into an election here in Canada, not too far off from the election in the United States, and people are remembering all of the meddling out of Russia from 2016.
A declassified intelligence report states that Vladimir Putin personally ordered a cyber and social media campaign to disrupt the recent U.S. presidential election.
The indictment charges 13 Russian nationals and 3 Russian companies. The defendants allegedly conducted what they called information warfare.
So, understandably, get a little riled up, but of course just the fact that an app is from Russia doesn't necessarily mean that it's not trustworthy. Just like an app made in the United States or Canada doesn't mean that it is trustworthy.
So it's great that you know, this lady. So that was from Front Burner. Lot to unpack there. Oh, my goodness.
Right. You hear the way she said it. St. Petersburg.
Yeah, that's where the Kremlin's located. Oh, my God. Vladimir Putin is behind FaceApp. Oh, my God.
He's turning you old.
Yeah. Russia turned me old. I'm going to download it just to make that Russia did this to me. Hashtag Putin puppet. Oh my God. Okay, yeah. So a lot to unpack there. So, you know, naturally it's good to bury the lead, you know, just go out there with all the things that are not true before you start. Then you go and then you say at the end, oh yeah, just because it's from Russia shouldn't mean we're concerned, even though, like, you know, 10 seconds earlier
just
she's like
everything,
yeah, red flag Russia. She literally said it's like it's from Russia, red flag in people's minds. I'm like, so are you saying that because that's a cultural phenomenon, because like I don't believe that for a second. I hear Russia, I'm just like, okay, just like every other country. Kyrgyzstan, same thing to me. It doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm. You know, all these people are under the boot of U.S. imperialism. It doesn't matter. But I guess right. to like the liberal, you know, smooth brains that consume nothing but CNN, you know, they hear Russia and they're like, boom, boom, boom.
If it was made in San Francisco, clearly it's awesome.
Then, yeah. Right? Well, if it was made in Arlington, Virginia, you know, nothing bad could happen there, you know.
That says it.
That's everything you need to know. So, yeah, it's just. And is there any proof of Russia interfering in American elections? Well, 13 Russians were indicted. How many were convicted?
Right.
Was anybody in the Trump campaign convicted for anything to do with collusion?
Right. It's such a farce.
Didn't Mueller even come out in the Mueller report? There wasn't even any. They said there's no proof.
Right.
Nothing. The NSA is the internet. The internet is the NSA. They haven't been able to find anything.
Right.
How is that even possible?
When's the NSA gate investigation going to happen?
That'll never happen. I'm very sorry. Everson tells us, you know, basically the U.S. security apparatus is spying on you 24/7. You know, Five Eyes security, which is, you know, includes Canada, Australia, New Zealand, like the whole Commonwealth, more or less, right. is constantly spying on you. But FaceApp, though, FaceApp, right. it could come after you. Facebook sells your data to whoever who wants it. But FaceApp, what about them?
Right, right.
And I just think it, you know, and this is my, you know, prediction. So we'll check up by October 2019. How many Russian interference in the Canadian election stories? We've already seen a couple. We've covered a couple on the show. Yeah. How they've already floated the idea, and that they've already had Canadian military figures come out and say that Russia could interfere.
Right.
Like, I guess anybody could interfere. I could interfere.
Oh, yeah. Just wait a little bit closer to, is it September or October, the election?
I don't even know. October. Yeah.
Just wait a little closer to.
Politics podcast. There's no when the election's happening. Self-crit. Yeah.
I like, can't wait for to see a propaganda ad with my own face on it that is like about white genocide, and it's a picture of me with blonde hair I edited onto myself using FaceApp. I'm so excited to see that. And Putin will make it himself.
Yeah.
Using the FaceApp neural network information, the camera roll photos they stole from me, and also like Microsoft Paint because they still use it there.
Yeah. This is the backwards Soviet Union. I mean Russia. Sometimes I swear to God they still pretend like it's communist Russia.
Well, they wish it was.
It'd be easier.
Right.
I mean, they used red flag. So I mean, like, but that's kind of a colloquial
it's been a
saying.
While.
Yeah, it's still like red. You know, I mean, they're reds. So yeah, that's all you really need to know about Russia. Yeah, I just it's almost like. This is kind of, at least I think, this is kind of how you prepare people mentally for like more surveillance, more crackdowns on civil liberties, more people being censored on social media and the like, because that way, you know, once everybody accepts that, like, oh, it's Russians, you know, it's okay.
Right.
You know, these people that are saying things like, you know, the Green New Deal is not going to save climate change, or, you know, the RCMP is spying on activists. Oh, those are just Russian bots.
Right,
you know,
right.
You know.
Perfect. I am a Russian bot. I was born a Russian bot.
I'm a Putin puppet. Getting that Soros cash, too. So it's I got two paychecks. It's nice. It's nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are my observations of today's FaceApp moral panic, to say the least. I don't know. I think they're just running out of stories, so they're just creating stories out of thin air.
Right.
I don't know how FaceApp captivated the world for
only
a day.
Like the Facebook CEO's name was like Mark Zuckerbitch or something, there'd be way more hysteria about it. Yeah.
What? He doesn't like us?
That was amazing.
What did he do?
What happened?
I have no idea.
What did he cut the mic?
Bad radio.
Oh my God. They're clearly not reacting to us anymore.
Okay.
No, they're still looking at us.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very strange. Okay.
Well then.
We're having technical difficulties. Right. The station is under attack from Russians. there's
Russian spies.
Putin has personally ordered an attack on CITR. Hopefully CSIS can come in here and spy and tap all our phones to help us. Okay. So yeah, any final thoughts on FaceApp? Did you make yourself look old on FaceApp?
I thought it was just an Instagram filter or Snapchat filter. Honestly, I'm pretty clueless when it comes to this stuff, but yeah, no, I didn't hear that. It's kind of interesting that it's become so.
Well, Drake did it. So,
yeah, exactly.
So it's cool.
Everybody's doing it. Yeah. And then,
Drake has been compromised by Russia, everybody. Watch out.
And you
out.
Know what? Nobody cares that it's made in Russia.
Like, no, they really care. Really, like, I mean, really. Well, normal people don't care.
Like, people our age, I feel.
Well, they just want to make themselves look old for clout.
Right, exactly.
If Russia could give them clout.
I don't care. I'll take it.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Being old makes me cool.
Yeah.
Somehow.
My old, old joke. What was Stephen Colbert did it too? Everybody Cool did it.
Yeah.
The Seahawks did it. The Seattle Seahawks Instagram page had old pictures.
I feel like they intentionally did it.
So when they lose the Super Bowl again, I'll just say they're controlled by Russia. So this is perfect. Russia made the Seahawks lose this year. That's great. Oh, yeah. The Jonas Brothers and Steph Curry. Jeez, is there anyone left that Russia hasn't tapped into their phones? Oh, my goodness.
Trump. We're waiting for him.
Yeah, Trump's behind this all somehow. No, it's weird how, you know, birtherism ended and then Russiagate began. It's just like one conspiracy theory after the other. Mm. Okay, we're going to have to take a short break for commercials, but we'll be right back after that.
Thursday, July 18th at Lanelouse, Montreal's Orchestre Criminal come to Vancouver for an evening of klezmer punk, turbo folk, and ancient gangster tunes from around the world. That's Thursday, July 18th at Lanelouse, Montreal's Orchestre Criminal with local favorites, Balkan Schmalkin. Tickets are $12 in advance at brownpapertickets.com, $15 at the door. Co-presentation of Discorder Magazine and CITR 101.9 FM.
Who we view as the most authoritative and electable is rooted in systems of oppression.
There are so many inequities around having our experts in our community speak about our work.
Obviously, there are several facets to this strangely homogenous nature of the electoral system.
And to be left out of conversations, it only exemplifies that loss of self-esteem.
Check out CITR's live panel podcast, Conversations, hosted by our Indigenous, Accessibility, and Gender Empowerment Collectives. Subscribe to Conversations, available now on iTunes.
What's up, everybody? We're back. You're listening to Spencer Lattu Show on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from SU Musqueam territory. Okay, so after we were under attack by Russian bots with sweet hair, we are now moving to our next segment. We're going to have a struggle session. So this is we're going to purge some bad ideology from everyone's mind, and we're going to become one cohesive political unit. I'm kidding. Oh, no one's going to get re-educated today. But instead, we're going to be discussing Donald Trump's racist tirade. So I don't know if everyone's seen this. This has taken over the media, completely dominated the media.
It's got a lead.
Yeah, it's something. It oddly enough came out right as Jeffrey Epstein was getting locked up. So I don't know if that has anything to do with anything.
Hey, listen, he's been banned from Mar-a-Lago for years. Okay.
Yeah.
It's all good.
It's I saw one really creepy photo of like Trump, Epstein, and like a young girl. I got super weirded out. Isn't it like? And it's completely accepted at this point that Trump is a sex offender too. So I mean.
Yeah.
Well, the worst part is that like. We're so unaware or unconscious about how normal it is, I feel like
amongst the ruling class.
Like this type of disgusting type of behavior. Yeah. But if some if some native person did it, or black guy or a brown guy, or anybody, even a poor white person did it, they're scum of the earth, kill them in jail. But,
death penalty.
Yeah.
Jeffrey Epstein, let's hear him out. I'm sure he has a good explanation. Anyways,
good family.
So Donald Trump's distraction, tweets. So he says, so interesting. interesting to see, quote, progressive. Oh, my goodness. I've said, quote, progressive a bunch of times now. One of my Trump stole that from me. So interesting to see, quote, progressive Democrat congresswomen who originally came from countries whose governments are a complete and total catastrophe, the worst, most corrupt and inept anywhere in the world, if they even have a functioning government at all, now loudly and viciously telling the people of the United States, the greatest and most powerful nation on earth, how our government is to be run. Why don't they go back and help fix the totally broken and crime infested places from which they came, then come back and show us how it is done. These places need your help badly. You can't leave fast enough. I'm sure Nancy Pelosi would be very happy to quickly work out free travel arrangements. So, wow. I don't know if you guys follow racist dog alerts or whatever that Twitter account is, but I'm sure they're barking wildly at this. This is, I don't know if this is the most racist thing Donald Trump has done.
I mean, it's really hard to compare them all.
I was Googling Trump racist tweet and I was like, shit, anything can come up. Who knows?
Right.
It's very ambiguous.
Yeah. So, but this is the, I went through a CNN clicking hole. They kept linking to Trump's racist tweets. And then we went all the way down the rabbit hole to this five CNN pages later. So they're getting lots of ad revenue from me trying to find this stuff.
I love it.
Yeah, so this three-tweet Twitter thread is pretty impressive. I mean, a lot of racist tropes here. I mean, you know, first of all, I think the only one that is foreign is Ilhan Omar, where she's a Somali refugee. So that's one. I'm pretty sure that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was born in America.
But she's Puerto Rican, right?
Yeah.
So she's clearly uncivilized.
Which is part of the United States, which Trump keeps forgetting.
Yeah.
Didn't he mention, this was probably an unrelated tweet, but he's like, why did we give this much money to Puerto Rico? They didn't need it.
Yeah, it's like, that's...
Or he's like, he was bashing their government.
Yeah, their government. Which is you! And they don't even have elected representatives. They're basically completely controlled by Washington. Anyways,
they're
I digress.
Brown colonies.
Yeah, and they are a colony, which is never discussed. So, you know, like, it just, I just think it shows the white supremacy of the United States. It's built into the system. I mean, Donald Trump, you know, really, he just pulls no punches. He's a casual, he just casually throws out the most racist of tropes. And I don't know what the entire, or what the, you know, if there's anything of actual substance to learn from Trump other than this being like a racist tirade to get everyone to focus on him and create a media shitstorm around him. I don't really know what other purposes serves. But other than that, well, I guess, sorry, the debates on whether or not it's racist is insane.
Right. Well, he's just a professional troll, right, at this point. And he clearly understands what he's doing. He's like, he had an excellent point, honestly, when, like, during the debates, he's like, yeah, my Twitter account, it's like having the New York Times without the lawsuits. And it's actually true. He can just say something ludicrous and millions of people, you know, and no thanks to the media as well, are just going to, like, you know, directly just look into it. Or
well, and, like, CNN's making tons of money off that.
Oh, they love it. They love it.
Right? Like, I mean, I went through, they had, like, five different articles written about Trump's tweets. You know, so I just think this kind of feeds the media industrial complex. You know, like these the mainstream media is more than happy to have Trump as president because they're making tons of money.
Hell yeah.
Tons
hell
of money.
Yeah, it's we live in a very, like, you know, going on about the whole spectacle we love. Right.
Yeah. Society of the Spectacle. Guide to Board. Right. Next Spencer Lattie Reading Club.
Right.
Possibly.
Spectacle is entertainment. And what's one of the most popular forms of entertainment is comedy. Right.
Yes.
And to a lot of people, this type of stuff is funny. Right. Like, go back to your country. Like, oh, that's hilarious. Yeah. They should go back to your country. Oh, wait. My ancestors from Ireland.
Where are you from? Europe? Go back to your continent.
Right. Yeah.
Indigenous people be like, you know, very, very upset with this kind of go back to where you came from kind of rhetoric. Yeah, it's a there's many levels to this. But I will say this, though, off of Trump's tweets, we have, you know, the people that he's discussing. Right. So they're very popular on the Internet. Ilhan Omar, Ayanna Pressley, Rashida Tlaib, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the Justice Democrats, and now they are called the Squad. That's their new nickname. countervailing opinions are only allowed for the next little bit. So, Ajit, what are your thoughts on the Squad, on the Justice Democrats?
Is that a Twitter-endowed moniker? probably, right?
Yeah, it's their new thing to be called the Squad. Yeah, it's their new social media.
Well, they, for one, being career politicians now, they love this back and forth because it raises their own sort of clout, right? Their own PR. It's like, oh, look, we're fighting the good fight. It's all about narrative for politicians, right? Like anybody, really, in like, you know, where your livelihood kind of depends on gaining traction with voters, constituents, right, customers, whatever have you. But yeah, I mean, we've clearly exposed like AOC, like, you know, her true motives, like supporting the Green New Deal.
Yeah.
And you mentioned, you probably mentioned on this podcast about Representative Omar, how about she supports like Israel, or like she passed that, supported that bill.
Yeah, yeah.
So, well, this is easy for them because they just got to play the other side, right? They're like, okay, he's a racist, he's sexist, this and that. It's easy for them, right?
Yeah, it's something. Sammy, do you have any thoughts on the Squad?
You know, I used to like be a really big fan of the Squad because I didn't realize what their voting record was like. And I didn't realize just how performative it all was. But now that I realize just how performative it is, I can't help but roll my eyes at every single time they take a picture. Like, seeing AOC in those very dramatic poses near, like,
the
concentration
fence.
Camps. And, like, the fence. And I was like,
it was,
you know,
a parking lot!
This could be very emotional, but I can just see right through it. And it's so fake. And it's so performative.
I saw a tweet where it was a Sim going, like, the hand over it. And then it was AOC. And it was, like, simulated grief. And I was like... Yeah, this is where they're getting their acting lessons from. And in like, you know, and of course, you know, I say this, you know, not being, you know, a right wing troll that, you know, everything's fake lizard people. Like, yeah. No anti-Semitic tropes here. This is not, you know, lizard people controlling them. It's pretty simple. The people that control the economy control the politics, you know, mm-hmm. Big money controls everything. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, you know, says I'm taking no corporate PAC money. Well, you know, all of her donors are from outside of New York. Mm-hmm. How do you explain that? Justice Democrats are created by a Silicon Valley millionaire who managed a hedge fund before becoming a politician. His own friend even said, oh, that's very strange to see him as a Democrat. He's very fiscally conservative. Why is he running the Democratic Party? Oh, yeah, because these progressives vote and pass right-wing policies and are supporters of just right-wing bullshit. So there's some really horrible stuff that I, you know, in my deep dive into, you know, what's going on. And I think this is, you know, tying it back to our discussion of propaganda, it really... It's the appearances of that really matter. And, you know, if you go on, if you spout enough leftoid-ish garbage, people are going to believe you and put you in that. And the right-wing media is happy to do it too, because they need people to be scared of. That's how you manufacture consent. You know, oh, there's the communists over there, right? So branding them as communists gets, you know, people scared, gets them to tune in, gets them to really reject all that they're saying and really, you know, in my opinion, kind of boost them. Then the people on the left being like, oh, no, these people who are, you know, At best, FDR reformers, at worst, you know, neoliberals that are, you know, and imperialists, they just go along with it and defend them just as a knee-jerk response because, you know, people are trapped in this political theater of, like, us versus them. And reality, you know, reality is much larger than, you know, this, like, simple binary, right? But a lot of people can't really snap out of that and see that, you know, maybe people want you to tune into it and not look at this stuff, right? So this is from Twitter from Corey Morningstar. She tweeted this. I don't know if it's it's like something that all these people signed on to. So it's from Ro Khanna. So he's the head kind of Justice Democrats congressman from Silicon Valley. The title of this letter, I guess, support a peaceful political solution to avoid a violent conflict that Venezuelans oppose. So this is the signees are Ro Khanna, Pramila Jayapal, Mark Pocan. So those are all progressive Democrats. Mark Pocan's the head of the Progressive Caucus. Ilhan Omar, Rashida Tlaib, Ocasio-Cortez, Ayanna Pressley. So the whole squad is there. And so the highlighted bits are: the letter condemns the Maduro government's anti-democratic actions, human rights abuses, and destructive economic policies, while expressing concerns that the Trump administration's misguided policies could make the situation even worse for Venezuelan people. Okay, so on the show, we've debunked basically everything there, from the anti-democracy, which is all bullshit created by the Venezuelan opposition, who chose to not run in the elections to make it look like it was anti-democratic. So, you know, they even had one of their people that ran in the elections that they demanded step out of the election so that they couldn't, so that they could keep this narrative going. Human rights abuses. Okay, that's like, you know, the classic, you know, liberal intervention. Oh, Bashar al-Assad is butchering his people. We need to go create a million people refugee crisis. There's Viagra rapes happening in Libya, and Amnesty International reports, even though Amnesty International says that there's absolutely no proof mercenaries are going around Libya killing people. Right. Now there's open air slave trades. Afghanistan is a giant opium producer. Right. Iraq is, you know, gave birth to ISIS. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you know, this human rights garbage, at what point are people going to be like, you know, maybe the United States doesn't really care about human rights when they're shooting black people, or no, choking black people to death on the street for selling loose cigarettes, where Eric Garner, the cop that choked Eric Garner to death in a band, even cops aren't allowed to put people in chokeholds, and he walks free. Mm-hmm. No charges will be pressed against him.
Right.
So where are the human rights abuses?
Right.
Destructive economic policies. How about the destructive sanctions that are killing Venezuelans every day? That even Jeffrey Sachs, who led he's the Harvard economist that led the economic shock therapy from what was left of the USSR, the new Russian Federation, where he's in charge of that, and even he says the United States is killing Venezuelans.
Right.
So it's just barbaric at this point. And Ro Khanna, Premier Jayapal, Mark Pocan, Rashida Tlaib, Ocasio Cortez, and Ayanna Pressley sign on to this. Mm-hmm. What's up with that? Sammy, any thoughts?
The one thing that's just been going through my mind this entire time is like hypocrites.
Very hypocritical. Very hypocritical. Very, so much posturing and so much just gaslighting of people, because a lot of people that like agree with this conversation also support Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and the squad, and you know, these people are in my opinion being gaslighted. They're being completely manipulated because they want progressive politics, but their leaders are pushing imperialist politics, which are just going to harm, you know, the people of Venezuela just to steal their oil. It's pretty cut and dry, at least for that. Yeah. Then later in the letter, it goes on to discuss the Maduro government's actions, including repression of Venezuelan civil society. There's no repression of Venezuelan civil society. Most of the newspapers are privately owned, and they run anti-Maduro stuff all the time. They were completely complicit in the 2002 coup against Hugo Chavez. So it's not this, you know, evil communist dictatorship. You know, there's so much dissent in the country, so much so that, you know, the CIA can basically run around with their puppet Juan Guaido. So failed economic policy once again. It's a failed economic policy when the United States sanctions you. Socialism doesn't work then. The killing of unarmed protesters. These people are not unarmed. They're Leopoldo López faction were fighting, and they would light cars and tires on fire in the middle of the highway and shoot at people with guns, and that's the opposition here. I get very upset with the Ocasio-Cortez crowd, especially on Venezuela. It's such a horrific position to have. Mm-hmm. Ajit, any thoughts on Venezuela and the squad?
Yeah, I mean, their stance is pretty clear. I mean, well, first of all, going back to Trump, he's like, go back to your country. Well, they wouldn't be there if it wasn't for colonialism, right? But clearly he's not well-read on that subject. It's kind of like, you know, Hollywood is also very, is a major culprit in creating this whole, like, you know, left-wing, you know, like the fake progressives, right? Which is a good term. And they're like the Avengers squad, the real life Avengers squad. And that's what people like, you know, like teaming up, fighting the good fight. It's just part of the illusion. And yeah, no, their policies are pretty clear. They're, you know, that's where their funding comes from, right? They're not going to go against their funders, their donors. Like, how easy it is?
They're in the Democratic Party, and this is the question that really got me into politics was, you know, why was Trump elected, and like, why was Hillary so disgusting? Then you find out quickly the Democratic Party is basically the Republican Party,
right?
But the Republican Party is always worse than the Democratic Party, so you have to vote for the Democratic Party, and it just moves further and further and further right. The Republican Party casts the Democratic Party as communists, even though that Hillary Clinton is a right winger that called black people super predators.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, what's left of American politics other than just a corporate state? Now, this is where I think this is a serious problem for the left and why, like, you know, I take such a hard stance on and crap on these people all the time because, you know, it sucks to go after your heroes. But, you know, I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on this. I think that we're repeating the same mistake that led into 2016, which is that, you know, do we run inside, you know, do we vote Democrat, vote blue, no matter who? Do we vote Liberal, NDP, Green? It kind of applies the same in Canada, you know, or do people, you know, finally take a step back from politics, realize it's all a big lie, it's all political theater, and, you know, start reading some political theory books of their own. You know, I recommend some Marx. Marx is great. Some Lenin. And, you know, if you're feeling a little bit festive, try some Mao, you know, try some guerrilla warfare tactics, you know, start reading and, you know, empowering yourselves to have like actual working class politics rather than going voting blue no matter who and pretending that's the best we can do. I don't know, Sammy, what's your thoughts? I view this as sheep herding into the Democrat Party.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I hate to be so cynical, but like, I highly doubt that anyone's actually ever going to do the reading.
It's elitist. Like, it's elitist. I know. Theory is elitist.
It is. Theory is so elitist. But very I feel elitist. Like what's so important is making things easier to be read by people that don't necessarily have formal education. Like, I, as a very educated person at this point, have such a hard time reading a lot of really technical stuff. Like, Marx takes a really long time for me to read. I still haven't finished the Communist Manifesto. It's like 40 pages.
It's good. Like, it's great stuff.
Yeah, and it's so wordy. And I feel like we're not really going to have, like, we're not really going to have, like, a true, like, political revolution until people are given a chance to vote outside of a two-party system or until one of those two parties is actually progressive, right, which I highly doubt is ever going to happen unless we have the miracle of Bernie winning the primary.
Yeah.
Which, mm-hmm, I don't know. I'm very cynical about this as much as I hate cynicism.
Yeah.
I am so sad.
You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM broadcasting live from NCU Musqueam Territory. This is Spencer Latu's show when we're discussing the where left movements go to die, the Democratic Party. And I guess you could say the same about the NDP, Green Party, Liberals in Canada. We kind of spread our Democratic Party over three parties. Ajit, so what's your thoughts? I think Sammy brings up some great points. You know, I would contend that you know, the peasants of Cuba can learn how to, you know, read and support you know, support Fidel Castro and, you know, build, and Cuba is the only sustainable country on earth. The only so country. True. Weird that it's the socialist one. Right. Weird. Weird. Weird how the free market hasn't solved that one. What are your thoughts, Ajit? You know, what are you looking at politically?
I thought cars...
Do we start selling little red books on the street corner? What do we do?
Perhaps. Well, first of all, like, our attention span needs to increase because technology has totally screwed our brain up with that.
I think the term is screen damage.
Screen damage.
You drop your phone, okay, but your mind is also dropped as well.
Right, absolutely. And, I mean, just looking at, like, you know, I'm doing, like, a summer camp and just, like, seeing how some of the kids are, like, with their attention spans and, like, phones are so fascinating at that age, but then it's like you don't realize, like, okay, it's gonna get old, like, eventually, but, like, you're gonna be using it for a different usage. But obviously I digress because, you know, the whole, first of all, you can't really experience or be exposed to real Marxist ideology until you hit a certain age, I feel.
Uh-huh. Like, unless you have a red diaper baby, so that's why I'm going to have a lot of kids.
Right. Well, yeah, unless you got, you're their dad.
I have 10, right? 10 kids, 10 party members, boom.
There you go. Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, and you can already see, like, the media train, like, they've been rolling over Bernie for a while now, and they're already kind of making him seem like the kook that, like, that they want him to seem like.
And he is, once again, part of the problem. He's not part of the solution at all.
Well, I mean, he's a career politician, right? So he stays.
He's
like,
a Democrat
that way, yeah.
He voted to bomb Yugoslavia. Like, right, he's not, you know.
Well, he
the
can't
next
be perfect, but
yeah. Perfect. He killed a bunch of people. It's like, you know, what are you, like, you know, even like actual imperialist politicians are viewed as like too far left.
Right.
There's no anti-imperialist American politician.
Well, that's because the narrative's controlled by people.
Which is just like how, right, you know, far off we are.
Right.
Oh,
right.
My goodness. Here's another one from Ilhan Omar. So Ilhan Omar tweeted on the 15th of March, "The people of Syria revolted against Assad's repressive dictatorship 8 years ago today, demanding a more just and free government. Peace-loving people around the world stand in solidarity with them in this struggle." Oh, Ilhan. Yeah, that Syria is a tough one because, you know, Bashar al-Assad is obviously quite the fascistic dictator. However, what has transpired since in Syria is not anything we should wish upon any country.
Absolutely
or any
not.
People.
No.
Displacing millions of people.
Yeah.
For, you know, to balkanize an area just so they can't build a pipeline through it to Russia. Like,
right. Or just compete. Well, you gotta, those, like, weapons are just lying idle. You gotta have a war.
Yeah,
you just have to.
Yeah, I mean, Lockheed Martin was dropping its stock price. I mean, yeah, Ilhan Omar is not a progressive champion of the people. It's really sad that they're using, like, a Muslim woman to prop up, you know, terrorist groups that are killing Muslim people.
Yeah, well, that's their
dream. Sorry, the moderate rebels. I didn't mean terrorists. Moderate rebels of Syria.
Well, that's the dream, though. It's like you have somebody who kind of looks like the, you know, their character, like, you know,
it's like what they want to see,
right? Yeah. But then she's on your side, really. But she can appeal to, of course, the minorities and people who have those real feelings of discontent, but, you know, secretly she's just, you know,
same old.
It's
new boss, same as the old boss,
right? It's an interesting thing. I feel like India, because I've been looking at Indian like politics.
Oh, jeez, that's quite the dumpster fire.
Right. But they were really ahead of the curve when it came to the type of stuff Trump was doing. Right, they're just very overt in bashing minorities.
Yeah,
and just kind of straight up being very blunt in their you know, ethnocentrism, like religious, like whatever sort of stuff. Right,
mm-hmm.
And I feel like Trump. And whatnot. Of course, a lot of other countries do that too, like Eastern Europe, all over, right? That's what he's borrowed. He's like, you know what? Being blunt appeals to people's, like, basic nature, right? So, and of course, living in an age of 140 characters of pictures, right?
Yes.
It goes well with that. And so we ourselves need to try really hard not to find that so appealing.
I just, yeah. I don't know what else to say other than, you know, like... It, like, you know, read a book.
Right.
I don't. Sammy.
Or don't be mean.
Yeah. Well, right. I don't know. Or just like.
Or don't let your insecurities define you so you hate other people. Like,
here's another beauty from Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. So speaking with Andrew Pollack of Florida. Someone needs to remind @AOC, Israel is our greatest ally in the region and the only democracy in the Middle East. Why not end aid to countries who chant death to America? Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez replies, no one is arguing this. Simply put, I don't believe in Cajun kids. Pretty straightforward value. I don't care if it's American kids, Mexican kids, or Palestinian kids. I vote against funding it on the U.S. border, too. It would be inconsistent with my values to fund it anywhere. So even there, you can just see her being wishy-washy on it. No one is arguing this. What? You mean the only democracy in the Middle East? Well, I mean, how about all those people in the West Bank? I'm pretty sure they can't vote. And all the people in Gaza live in an open-air prison. So I don't know if that's what a democracy is. I guess compared to America, where, you know, they have 25% of the world's prison population. I guess that makes sense.
Right.
It's I guess it's speaking out of both sides of your mouth, where you can speak to, you know, status quo liberals, where, you know, they want to keep the American-Israeli special relationship alive and well, but also progressives who, you know, really feel like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who sits on the oversight committee of the caging of the children, who made the deal with Nancy Pelosi to cave to Trump.
Right.
So, I mean, there's that. And she, whatever happened to abolishing ICE? Remember when she first got started?
Mm-hmm.
That really went out the window quick.
She pulled a typical political move. I'll promise this. What?
Hashtag abolish ICE. I was excited. I'm like, yeah, abolish them. And then here we are.
That's her closing Guantanamo, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well said. The Obama comparison is really there. So, Sammy, so what do we do? Do we walk into the graveyard of progressive politics? Can the Democratic Party become the vanguard party of the people?
God, I don't know.
Yeah. What do you do?
I'm so depressed.
I know. It's horrible.
Yeah, I mean, and like I'm same sorry. Thing in Canada. Will anybody
NDP,
ever be good?
NDP crushes Palestinian solidarity resolution.
Let's just go to the beach.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, I'm just gonna like go live in the woods, eat some berries. I don't know. I can't do this anymore.
You've gone full and prim.
Yeah, I'm giving up.
Just checking out. That's why I said today I was like, I'm either going to become apolitical or I will watch the establishment left burn. There was only two ways out of this.
You can do both.
Yeah, I could do both. I could do both.
You could watch it from the forest.
Yeah, I'll watch it from the forest.
Have a little phone.
How do you, just the fact that, you know, because this has been tried, like, you know, the German Social Democratic Party tried this. and it didn't work.
No.
And everybody else has also tried to take, like, do these people really think this is like a new idea to take over the Democratic Party and, like, you know, use electoral politics to, like, build socialism? Because right. This has been tried so many times.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, it worked one time in 1971 in Chile. Yeah.
What happened?
Salvador Allende was elected to office. They nationalized the copper industry, which they paid, you know, very good money to the American corporations that owned it. And then the CIA backed General Augusto Pinochet. They stormed the presidential palace. Salvador Allende killed himself. And for the next 3 months, they tortured people inside the Santiago soccer stadium. They had a concentration camp in there where they killed leftists.
Right.
Wow.
So that's what happens when you vote for socialism through the ballot box. Mm-hmm. So, like, that's where I'm kind of like, what do I say to DSAers? Can I look at them seriously and be like, you really think this is, like, a viable strategy?
Yeah, I don't know. The fun fact, this morning I Googled DSA Canada just to see if there was, like, a...
Democratic Socialists of America Canada?
Exactly. Because I want to join.
Yeah.
I want to infiltrate. I want the card. But now I got to, like, fucking... I got to move to Brooklyn.
Oh, yeah.
Or even just, like, Seattle or something.
Yeah.
And become a citizen.
Yeah, we'll all join Seattle DSA.
Oh, my God. I can't wait.
Yeah, so I don't know. I just don't know what to say to these people. You know, am I too cynical? I don't know. I'm just kind of looking at history, and it'll just be like, you know, even if you do it the right way and you don't step on anyone's toes, I feel like the counter-revolution that will happen very swiftly. So say hypothetically, Bernie Sanders does not get cheated by the DNC. They're cheating him right now. Mm-hmm. They're totally going to cheat him. They lie in every single poll about Bernie Sanders.
Right.
They go to the second ballot where the superdelegates are allowed back in because the superdelegates are off the first ballot, which is why there's 69 people running for the presidency, the presidential nomination. So they go to the second ballot where Elizabeth Warren, Cory Booker, and it's looking like Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris, and Bernie Sanders are kind of the top three.
Mm-hmm.
All the superdelegates split themselves between Warren. And then Bernie gets all the people's delegates somehow and wins.
Right.
Is he not going to be obstructed every day in Congress by the Democrats and the Republicans?
Right.
And if he ever does get anything through, are they just not going to have a full-on, like, you know, bikers for Trump, you know, take over the White House?
Right.
Like,
well, what a BS scam the superdelegates are, like.
Very Democratic.
And they don't even lie. They don't even lie about the fact that why it's even in place. I forgot whichever, I think it was in the 70s or 80s, whenever... whoever won the primary, they're like, yeah, we need this. So fringe politicians, aka people who are
what was that guy's name?
Carter?
No, it's not. No, Carter brought death to the Latin Americans. I'm gonna Google that one. What do Democrats really believe? Do they just believe in this?
I think they want to run the most attractive candidate. Like that's they. Like, we're like our voters are Instagram users. So
that's why AOC will be a presidential candidate. She will be a presidential candidate. She already has her own cosmetics line. Which is
really
not cosmetics line, but she does like makeup tutorial, like has done at least a makeup tutorial,
Like self care on Instagram Live.
Is just like, you know, I'm not even going to get into. Maybe I will get into the Unilever plantations. So Unilever is like the largest cosmetic brand; they own most of the cosmetics industry.
It's French,
and right. And they have literal slave plantations in Africa that have been there for like 100 years. And so I just can't, like, you know, I just don't get this, like, progressive, like, makeup obsession. Like, these cosmetic companies are, like, the devil.
They're the absolute worst.
Absolutely.
Are you even a big business if you're not enslaving people? Like,
yeah, really.
Yeah.
The prerequisite.
It's a lot. Yeah. So I don't know, Ajit. I want to believe in the lies. I really want to. It would make my life a whole lot easier. You know, I'm getting a little bit anxious sometimes thinking like, you know, how am I supposed to convince enough people that, you know, this is all a lie? But, you know, until then, what do we do, right? You know, do we just start a capital reading club?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Reading's too much.
It's elitist. Reading is elitist.
Instagram page.
Yes.
A communist or, you know.
Yeah.
Progressivist Instagram.
No, actually, the communist Instagram is already all over that. Communism.
That's what I mean.
Communism ain't dead.
No, great Instagram account. Yeah.
Great Instagram account. We're facing an uphill battle. Speaking of Canadian politics, so Did anyone see the hashtag Trudeau must stay trending?
Oh, no.
What was that about?
Basically, it's so I've even seen memes, like boomer memes about this. So, you know, Canadian politics works as such. You know, everyone gets mad at the Conservatives. Everyone votes Liberals. Right. Everyone gets mad at the Liberals right. and votes Conservatives.
That's it.
Repeat ad infinitum. So if it's meme, if it's boomer meme, not just regular memes, like edgy memes for edgy teens, it's we're talking boomer memes, like the lowest of the low memes. When are we going to get off that hamster wheel, or are we ever going to get off that, or are we going to, or Trudeau must stay? Is that going to be the official line of the left of Canada?
I'm scared.
Yeah,
I'm so scared.
It's really terrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do we do? You know.
All vote NDP. I was like thinking about this in the shower yesterday and also like every single day where I'm like, you know, strategic voting. I did that in 2015.
Mm-hmm. It was supposed to be the last. Trudeau. It was supposed to be the last one.
I know.
Of first past the post where we wouldn't have to do that ever again.
Yeah. And now
we
look
were told.
At us. Still first past the post.
Yeah.
And like, I live in a really conservative liberal split riding, and I was truly so terrified, my little liberal lizard brain back in 2015, that if I personally did not vote liberal, that the Conservatives would win. They won by like a couple hundred votes. I could have just out of principle voted NDP because I do not like my liberal MP. I will not name him so I do not dox myself.
Uh-huh.
But I like the NDP
this guy
a lot better.
Wasn't this guy a conservative not too long
yeah,
ago?
Yeah, he used to be a conservative.
Just like Elizabeth Warren was a Republican.
Right.
And
yeah.
somehow she's a progressive.
Well, if you live anywhere in Metro Van, it's pretty much a battleground, I feel. Like, in upcoming election. I do feel like the direction, the favoritism is slightly more towards the Liberals.
Yeah, I feel like there's the incumbent advantage for sure.
Right, exactly.
And he did put the pipeline through, which is good, which was big for white Canada. So he actually may retain some seats.
No, he will. And he knows how to play the ethnic cards well, too, because every politician does that.
It's it's an uphill battle, to say the least. Just looking at the state of electoral politics. And that's just why I say to the people that get involved in electoralism, why? It's not broken, it's fixed. Against
Well, everybody wants a job, right?
Yeah, I guess, yeah. If you want to get started in the non-profit industrial complex, you have to start there. Speaking of the not-for-profit industrial complex, we can get off this horrifically depressing tune. So outside CBC Vancouver, there was a protest from our favorite non-for-profits, the non-for-profit industrial complex. This is the Our Time Vancouver, so they have some repeat offenders of the 350 crowd. So this is basically, and this is kind of just shows how this game works, where they create these new NGOs on top of other NGOs. If you look at who they're following, obviously it's the whole crowd, Sierra Club, 350, and Greenpeace and the like, but they are directly tied to to 350 as reported on their own campaign materials and the like. So they're a youth campaign for an intersectional hashtag Green New Deal for Canada. So a lot to unpack there. We have the tip of the hat to our intersectional crowd out there. So, you know, if you want to see, you know, black women capitalists, that's what that's all about now. The Green New Deal, we've thoroughly debunked that. I get an aneurysm whenever I think about it, so I try not to think about it, but I can't stop. It's saving capitalism, not the environment. And in fact, it's probably the most dangerous thing for the environment, because their solution to capitalism's profitability crisis is to monetize the entire natural world. Rather than just, you know, running over a forest with bulldozers, you now just have to buy a carbon offset, then do it, so you can create a derivative market to trade on. So it creates more markets, which is good for more capitalists, more money is flowing. But, you know, what does that mean, right? So we're already getting some new, very terrifying news. So this is coming out of, did you hear about this conference? There's a lot of conferences going around. There's a General Electric funded GMO tree conference. Did you hear about that? Tree farms? Mm-hmm.
No.
You ever heard about tree farms? So because according to the not-for-profit industrial complex, cutting down trees is a zero emission activity.
How so?
Because it doesn't require no fossil fuels are coming from extracting a tree.
Really?
Yes.
What do you cut it down with?
I don't know.
You're going old school?
Fishing
just
wire.
Two lumberjacks on both sides.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that.
maybe a chainsaw, just a little bit. The electric chainsaw. Electric chainsaw. There you go.
There we go.
Environmentally friendly. So yeah. So we're seeing the classic bait and switch where environmentalism, which started, really by indigenous people protecting their sacred lands and their ancestral territory, has turned into.
Terrorism?
That would be nice if there were some eco warriors out there really fighting the good fight. But instead, now it's, we need solar panels and windmills. Like, that's somehow environmentally friendly.
Right.
Yeah. Like, I mean, Greenpeace was tweeting China. They're trying to show us China and be like, we want to have this giant solar panda bear. Like, well, you cut down the forest where the panda bears live. That's why they're endangered, you crazy motherfuckers. Like, what is wrong with you people?
Right.
But yeah, this is the world we're living in. It's a total...
need a maple leaf solar farm.
That
would solve everything.
Absolutely.
Or we'll have the I Heart Pipelines, solar field. That'll be another one. Have you seen those t-shirts?
No.
Yeah, they're great. There's t-shirts.
I Heart Maple Leaf Pipeline.
Yeah, you've seen that. You know what I'm talking about.
I saw it.
It's horrible.
You know what?
I
feel bad for people who are so, I feel that they're so out of their luck. They're like, these people want to put me out of a job and give their jobs to immigrants. So I need that pipeline because it's my financial security.
Yeah, and it's not like the world has changed and that the entire world is going off oil and that the global price of oil has been dropping and it has nothing to do with, as much as I complain about $350, it's very little to do with them. We're going to have to take a short break for commercials, but we'll be right back after that.
MRG Concerts presents Detroit indie rocker Steph Chura will be performing at the Biltmore Cabaret on August 1st with Vancouver's own Dadweed. Don't miss this show and grab your tickets at eventbrite.com or Red Cat Records.
Discorder, that free magazine from CITR, has been documenting the best in music, arts, and culture since 1983. Let's see what one man of prestige has to say about Discorder.
What up, though? This is Big Snoop Dogg, and I fucks with Discorder magazine. How about that?
Smoke weed every day.
Pick up a copy around Vancouver or f*** with Discorder online at discorder.com.
Crimes and Treasons Radio, this is Riff Raff. Every Tuesday from 9 to 11 p.m. on 101.9 FM with Relly Rails and Jules Andre Brown.
What's up, everybody? We're back. You're listening to Spencer Latu Show on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from Musqueam, Musqueam territory. Okay, so to end the show, we're going to discuss the trees, genetically modified trees, and there's a lot going on here. Do you have any thoughts on this biomass thing? We've touched on this before. So biomass is a code word for using trees as the new coal. And now they're going to create tree farms to produce enough energy. It's weird how the tree used to be the symbol of environmentalism. Like, we're saving the trees. And in fact, we had the Great Bear Rainforest whole thing in BC where, right. People were protecting against logging. And now it's like logging is going to save us from climate change somehow. So it's just weird how it's laundered through, the corporations that control the planet.
At your convenience.
Yeah, it's a... it's crazy. So this report, Trees, GE Trees, and Nature to Save Capitalism from Itself, new report, excerpts. This report examines events and research publicized between June 23rd and July 4th, 2019 that discuss the mass use of trees to enable the unsustainable lifestyles of the world's top 1% in the face of looming ecological catastrophe. From trees genetically engineered to feed the, quote, green manufacture of energy, plastics, and chemicals, the planting of trillions of trees to reduce global atmospheric carbon levels and reforms to the economic system to allow future profit-making under the guise of biodiversity protection.
Okay,
that's a lot there. Mm-hmm. So at the start they really nailed it. So we're doing all this, we're jumping through hoops, we're creating a Green New Deal just to sustain the people who own multiple yachts,
right?
Not even the one yacht crowd, which are bad enough.
Right.
But like the 50 yacht, Betsy DeVos crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to geoengineer the planet to meet their needs.
Right, right.
So it's like a global, it's just like a global monarchy almost. Like they literally are kings of the world.
Pretty much. And we'll just cut trees to save the world.
And somehow, this is a better option than socialism. I'll never understand that. I'll never get that. And that's why I just can't stand these. And you know, Sammy, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. My take is that the not-for-profit industrial complex, the Our Times of the world, the 350s of the world, the Greenpeaces of the world, the Democratic Party of the world, the Squads of the world, the Liberals of the world, stand in the way. They are ultimately what, you know, tears apart the socialist movement by making, you know, quote-unquote reasonable people decide between, like, oh, the mainstream normal crowd and those, like, crazy radicals,
right.
Even though the normal mainstream people are suggesting the most radical thing on Earth is geoengineering the planet to serve the needs of the 1%.
Yeah. Marx and Engels are spinning in their graves. Like, this is so, so, like, not it. You know?
Right.
Chief,
this is not it. Yeah. I'm going to suggest when you go back to whatever page you're on in the Communist Manifesto, read under bourgeois socialism, where these people fall under, which is that, you know, it's for the good of the worker that the bourgeoisie is in charge. And I think climate change has really exposed why it is not the case that is, you know, the bourgeoisie are benevolent dictators. They're, you know, anything from it, and they're going to tank the entire planet rather than give up their spots as rulers of mankind.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot.
It's like, it's also taxation. You know, you just scare, like, the average worker, like, oh, socialists are going to tax you through the roof, right?
And it's funny because, like, there would actually be no taxes. You'd have no income tax. No, you just couldn't make money off of owning property.
Right, and our taxes are...
So it has nothing to do with workers, yet right. Workers are, like you said, are so triggered by that.
Right, and we're just... taxes are just heavily mismanaged, too, right? Like, it's because there's the middleman or corporations for the taxation system, because services have to get contracted out.
Well, it's ice cream socialism, right? So you take it, you know, you take it from somebody to give it to somebody else,
right.
Versus, like, you know, you could just maybe not own, you know,
the production,
right? Yeah, Amazon, you know, web services or whatever the fuck that is, and you know help cage migrants and make money off that,
right,
off that cloud technology. Yeah, it's a lot. Sammy, any thoughts on what is to be done?
About, like, the 1% cutting down trees for energy?
No, they're going to plant trees to cut them down,
yeah,
so that they can get 100 yachts.
So, like, a tree takes a very long time to grow, and it's going to create its own, like, little ecosystem.
These are genetically modified trees, though.
That's, and
they're
going to
live on tree farms.
The worms that are living on the tree are going to be, like, super worms. I can't wait for super worms. And then we're going to have super birds that are eating those worms, and we're gonna have to kill all those super birds.
Hopefully they kill
us
first.
Yeah, hopefully the super birds get us.
Oh yeah,
they could be the eagles that fly to Mordor.
Oh my god, I can't wait.
The super
honestly
eagle.
No, I'm
ultimate
all,
freedom.
I'm all for this.
Peak
I'm on
freedom.
Board now.
Yeah, you know what, the Green New Deal, not so bad. Super,
you know,
eagle,
if we can create dragon, like, you know, I'm on board, right?
Yeah.
Do you say dragons?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Fantasy,
I'm a liberal.
Reality.
I love Game of Thrones.
Right.
Yeah, lizards will become
Khaleesi is my bae. Yeah, as she basically plays the part of Obama's drones on Syria. It's a lot. Yeah, so it seems that the left is stuck between a rock and a hard place. You know, you have charlatans everywhere. You have the not-for-profit industrial complex pretending to be environmentalists. Environmentalism, honestly, is the most interesting.
Right.
For
yeah.
Everybody right
no,
now.
It is.
You know, the most progressive people in the U.S. Congress are imperialists. Canada is, what is going on here? Nothing.
Right.
Yeah.
We got infiltrated a long time ago.
Yeah.
Probably right when Mark's first book was published. Banker read this. Oh, shit.
Yeah,
we gotta
get
somebody
this
on
out
the
of
inside.
Here. Yeah.
What was it, the Communist Party, the U.S., like, half the members were FBI agents or something?
I can imagine that. CPUSA was behind the civil rights movement. And they got, and now the CPUSA has a unity with Democratic Party, so they were campaigning for Hillary Clinton.
Right,
probably
right.
The least communist thing you could have done, but I digress. Yeah, you know, all we can hope is that people stop thinking theory is elitist. Read a book.
Right.
You know, we'll start capital reading groups.
Please, I can't read it. It's so long.
Okay,
we're not hyper intellectuals. We have social media. Okay. So,
yeah. No, I'll just meme it. And
right.
Then hopefully that
there
can.
We
oh
go.
My god!
Get
yes, meme
there.
Every paragraph.
Meme revolution.
Yeah. That's, the revolution will be memed.
That's straight up.
Thank you so much for listening. That's all for this week, folks. We can catch us every Thursday, 6 to 7:30 p.m. If you want to hear more from our back catalog, I highly suggest our deep dive into the Green New Deal to see why I become a raving lunatic while discussing it. You can find that on Apple iTunes Podcasts and on SoundCloud as well. You can yell at me on social media, Spencer Latu. Thank you so much for listening once again. And, you know, next week, there's no shortage of bizarre propaganda coming or flying around here. So we'll definitely have something to say next week. Stay tuned for more amazing programming from CITR. And we are gone.